Welcome back, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in for another awesome edition of the IT Babble. This is episode 145. And I don't know about you, Tony, but today was a beautiful day here in Indianapolis. What was it like over there in Jeju?
It was incredibly windy. It was so windy that we got like a wind alert to our phones to stay indoors.
Wow.
Yeah, it gets really windy here. It's crazy.
Well, we have a fantastic show. We were just, right before we started recording here, we were just going through the agenda. We're going to talk about this interesting New York Times article that I saw entitled, How Effective is Your School District? A new measure, but we'll talk more about that. We're going to talk about France, the French, and how they don't like the mobile phones in schools. And then we're going to talk about, I'm going to call it Chromepocalypse. This article calls it Chromageddon, but I think Chromepocalypse is a much, much better title for this whole thing. But first, we're gonna talk about, and I think this is going to be an easy one. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say about this, but it's been reported, and I saw it in Laptop Mag, but it was in other places too, Mac Rumors, Mac 9 to 5, that Apple is going to be making a cheaper iPad. So right now they have a $300 iPad, but people believe that it's going to be sub-$300, kind of $275, $280, $270 kind of range. And obviously this is, I think one of their goals with this is to get iPads back into schools because iPads are getting clobbered in schools. Tony, is this going to make any difference at all?
I don't know. I mean, it'll help a little. I mean, cause you got to factor in $70 for, and I would say an additional $70 per iPad for things like, cases that are strong.
Yep.
Accessories, like all you need, kind of like a budget per iPad to buy all the little accessories you need. And some schools spend a lot more than $70 per iPad, except for a set of iPad accessories. So
yeah,
I think it might help, but still, I mean, the conversation that we're having is, number one, are we gonna, you know, keep buying iPads? Period, or if we're going to have an iPad program, do the parents buy the iPad?
That's interesting. And that's interesting.
Yeah. Number two, why do we have a platform where our software cost to run the iPads is about anywhere from $2 to $4 a month per iPad? So anywhere from, like, I don't know, $4 to $8,000 a year to run iPads that are 90% running free software.
Yeah.
So we're spending money to run free software.
And one thing that I think schools like about Chromebooks is they have a perpetual license. So when you buy a Chromebook, it's $30, and that's the perpetual that's it. That is licensed. That device is licensed with you for the entire. You don't have to pay an annual fee.
That's good.
Yeah, and Chrome, because it's just online. It's just on the internet. I mean, you're not really buying apps. You may be buying subscriptions to websites, right, and services, but you're not buying apps per se. And so I think it gives you even more flexibility. We are having the talk in our school because we are one-to-one iPads in our middle school, but a lot of the teachers and some of the parents, they're just not sold on it. They're like, kids can, even though we have them locked down and kids can't, you know, game on them really or do much, they just, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a very productive device. You know, it's
right.
Great for creativity, but when you come to, you know, typing a paper, doing some serious research, it just can't beat a traditional laptop. You know, keyboard, trackpad, and you know, it just doesn't. So we're going to be deciding whether we're, and they're cheaper too. They are cheaper.
Yeah. And you can, I mean, there's plenty of, and I'm not really recommending these for schools because I don't know how durable the bodies are, but there's plenty of convertible systems on the market now too, where if you're really wanting a touchscreen experience for a handful of apps or services, you can simply flip the screen around or take the screen off and use it and then reattach it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The other thing too is I'm seeing the first generation of middle school kids right now who have grown up without a computer and who've grown up with just phones or some kind of tablet.
Yeah.
And they can't really do any work. They have no idea how to make anything work. And it would have been awesome if the whole, touch revolution connected all the way through to all the other industries and business started developing everything so it was touch-based. But that didn't really happen.
Oh,
So
hold on here. Hey, Aiden. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi. Hi.
Okay. All right. Let's go to bed, guys.
Hi.
Go to bed. Yeah. I thought they were in bed. They were in bed. Hi, Emma. Go. Bye, Emma. Good night. Good night. Okay. I may find that and edit that out. I don't know.
I don't know. You could just start the show with that.
I probably could. Yeah, go
Yeah,
ahead.
so yeah, the students just they can't really make anything or do anything. I mean, they have laptops and it's like, okay, we're gonna do this today. We're gonna and some of the, I'm just surprised. Like some of the kids, they open iMovie on their laptops and or GarageBand and it's never been opened. It's like the first time.
Wow.
And you would think kids would be into like movie making or even what's that stupid app on the laptops on Apple, Photo Booth.
Oh, yeah, photo booth. Yep.
Yeah, it's never been opened either. I'm like, why aren't you guys using this to make like silly photos? And some of you are into music. Your Apple can actually record music and you can edit it. It's got all these loops in it. So I don't know what they're doing. They're just, I guess, touching screens and playing games. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it just c constantly consuming, I guess. Just constantly consuming. So, yeah, our kids, at our school are, they're very studious and but they constantly we have a laptop cart and it like I think I mentioned it before, they constantly check out the laptop cart and are and just so they can type. I've seen a class, a middle school language arts class, where the kids will have their iPad open and then they have a computer open. So they can type, and they use their iPad kind of as a way, like they have some notes in there, or they may have an ebook in there that they're looking at, and then they're typing. They're actually doing the work on a laptop, and I found that very, very telling. I was just like, "Wow, man."
Apple needs to have a different, like, if they want to get ahead again and like really change the market, if the iPad is the base, they need to have the peripherals so that when you sit down and you drop your iPad down on a table, there is some way for you to interact with it in a deeper way, use different kinds of processing somehow, program, do something, and then it goes back in the iPad and you take the iPad with you and it's all in there. Maybe it's still protected, so you can't do things on the iPad when it's not kind of docked or synced up, but you have all these options. So your iPad, you're carrying it around, and it's kind of like your key or your pass to get into
Oh.
your like computing environment. Now that would be pretty awesome because then you transition from the personal entertainment device to the business device back and forth, and maybe you're working in like a cloud environment. But it doesn't seem like they're thinking about that. It seems like the platforms are completely disconnected. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, have you? I don't think iPad management through even the Apple operating system has gotten better in like 5 years.
No,
I
no.
connect an iPad to my Mac, and iTunes still opens and goes insane, just
Yeah.
goes crazy.
Yeah, do you trust his
And
computer? And
I
yeah.
don't really understand what I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, it wants me, is it? It's asking me, do I want to set it up? It's already set up. Why can't I just plug it in and charge it? Why is it opening?
Oh
And
yeah.
why can't I just put in a password and see all my data on it? I don't understand.
And
Like,
their cloud, their iCloud is just the worst. So I had, I have an older phone and an older iPhone, and I have a bunch of contacts on there that I'm never going to call these people. Like you and I, we teach and we taught. Well, at least I taught, internationally. And so I have like phone numbers from Dubai, phone numbers from Kuwait, phone numbers from China. And those people probably aren't even there anymore, or they won't be there forever. And I'm just not going to call them, right? I can email them or text them or whatever. So I went and I was like, yeah, let's, I'll just delete them from my phone. Well, they deleted everywhere, everywhere. They deleted from my computer. They did, and it, oh, I was just infuriated. I was just like, oh, stupid Apple. I just wanted them off my phone to, just to clean things up, and they deleted them everywhere, and so I don't it was stupid. Stupid.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just I don't iOS 11 is buggy, is still buggy, even though it's been out for quite a while. It's just I don't know. I'm kind of over the whole iPad thing. I'm all for Chromebooks, and I got to take a real hard look at Windows S to see if that's actually a real competitor or if it's just kind of something that Microsoft cooked up. So, but anyway. I mean, we could transition right to the France article if you want. The article about,
Let's do it. Let's go
yeah,
straight to France.
boom, to Parlez-vous français? So, this article is called France to Impose Total Ban on Mobile Phones in Schools. And this is by Henry Samuel of The Telegraph from the UK. And so in September 2018, countrywide, all schools, elementary, middle, and high school, I don't think universities, but all the rate, K through 12, no phones, gone. You cannot bring them into the school. Or maybe you can bring them into school, but you can't use them. So, all right, Tony, you said you have some thoughts. Let's hear them.
I do have some thoughts because guess what's happening at my school after Christmas break?
No,
The
are
same
you really? You're
thing, same policy. It's in a like it's a level of addiction that I haven't seen in a while, and it's all encompassing for some of these kids. And yeah, I don't know. I don't want to. I don't want to throw them under the bus. They're not bad kids or anything, but I mean, so some kids went into the auditorium on Friday morning, and the auditorium actually wasn't open. One of the staff, like one of the like facilities people, they left the door open, and the kids went in there like a half an hour early. All the lights were off, and I walked over and I looked in the door and I just saw all these like bright screens on down in the seats. The kids were literally just all sitting on their phones with their screens on, not talking to each other in the dark, playing video games on their phones. That's not normal behavior. It's not. It's
Now,
not normal.
to be
Why?
fair, is so your students there is now many of them are Korean, correct?
Yes,
Do you think
yes.
it's a Korean? Because I know the internet is the South Korea has the fastest internet in the world.
That's true.
And do you think that this pretty much unfettered access to the internet and do you because I saw kids who were on their like sneaking on their phones here in America last year, and in Dubai and in Shanghai we would see it too. But it wasn't like a huge level of addiction. It was like put it away, this is not the time. And they're like, okay, roll their eyes.
Well,
But
the boarding school I worked at in China, there was no phones allowed at all. The phones were kept in a secure area, and when the kids left campus, they could take them. And it was for that reason. If a kid had a phone, they literally would just like try to go to the bathroom during every class and stay on the phone the whole time.
yeah.
So and China has really, I think it has really bad internet. So I think it's what they call like FOMO, fear of missing out. And I've even asked the kids, like, what are you doing on your phone? Just tell me. And we went through it, and they're not doing anything. They're all just chatting back and forth or playing games. They're not actually doing anything meaningful. And even when I asked them about their chat, like, what are you talking about? Is there like some big news? Is there like a scandal? Is there a big rumor at school? And they're like, no, just normal conversation. Just, hey, what's going on? Smiley face. Like, here's a piece of sushi. Like, that's it. Like, and selfies. And that's it. There's no depth. They're not, I would even go as far as say they're not even using their phones to cheat, to talk about teachers. They're not doing any of that. And then we had a couple issues even after formally reviewing the policy with all the kids. We had some kids like make Facebook pages about other kids and constantly post photos of them.
Oh
And we had to
yeah.
shut those down and like report the kids to Facebook and call their parents. That happened like 3 times in 3 weeks after having a conversation.
Wow.
So I don't think they see any consequences. And that's the other thing. Like, we kind of need to protect them because they're going to do something stupid because they're in middle school or high school, and one of their friends is going to put it online. And you should be able to do something stupid in high school and move on from it. You should be able to. But you can't. You can't do that. You can't move on if it's always online the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So, and they don't understand that, but I think definitely we're protecting them at that point. So, yeah, that's where it's going. That's where it's
Wow.
going. And the policy is pretty good. And when they were going over the policy, I kept asking a lot of questions. And one of the questions I was like, okay, I'm a student. Tell me when I can use my phone. Tell me when. Because if you don't tell me when the phone is allowed, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So they did work it out because we do have some kids living on campus to where they have some time during the evening where they can use their phones. But yeah, I mean, and then we've got kids in the boarding school, so they're not allowed to sleep in their rooms with their phones. Their phones are checked in at night. But some of these kids have multiple phones, like they're sneaking phones in.
Oh yeah.
So who's, but
Yeah.
then I'm like, you know, who's buying these phones? Like, I've purchased a phone in South Korea. I know what you have to do. You can't buy them anonymously. It's impossible. So you have to register them and you have to be an adult. So I'm just also like, you know, what's going on here? So I don't know if it's the parents, actually. A lot of people are like, the parents are giving them 3 or 4 phones. I'm like, maybe not. Maybe it's literally just some adults who know kids want extra phones and they're charging them a premium and registering them in their names and they're just prepaid. So some of the kids said that there was like an underground market for buying phones. I guess that's what they mean, that there's actually people out there. And that's even scarier because those people, they definitely, A, don't care that they're children, and B, you know that they've done something to the phone so that they're monitoring it or so that they can get some more money out of this kid later.
Oh yeah. There, that's Sketchyville right there. Total.
Obviously, they've got some kind of cloud service on it and they're looking for blackmail material. That's what I would think. So,
Well, back to France though. Do you think an entire, so you're a school and you're doing it, but do you think an entire country can do that?
well, you know, this the principal, the high school principal, told me that at New York public schools, and I haven't verified this, that kids can't take their phones to school anymore, and they have to like go to a CVS pharmacy or a Walgreens, and they have a locker the kids can rent to store their phones in during the day, so they can get it after school because they're not allowed to even bring it through like the metal detectors on campus. So I guess if the punishment is strict enough, I mean, if you can take the phone and you're not required legally to give it back unless the parents come pick it up, or if it's a public school, maybe you don't ever have to give it back. Maybe you tell the parents, the law says if you bring this to school, you never get it back. You lose your property. If you're allowed to do that, I think it could be pretty effective.
Yeah, I'm looking here to see. No, I see in 2015 that they lifted a ban on cell phones, but I don't know if they've reinstated it or not. But wow, yeah, I would worry. My concern about banning it from an entire country or from an entire school district, a big school district like New York, where you have, you know, a million students, is that it would become a just a distraction. It would be students would be trying to sneak them in because they're kids. That's what they do, right?
Yep.
And teachers would be giving up instructional time, like trying to, you know, d playing this cat and mouse game. That'd be my con that would be a concern. Like when you try to do something on such a scale like this, I think at a school level, I think it's definitely doable. But an entire
Right.
district or country or state, I don't know.
Well, what I don't understand is like, okay, so back in like the 1980s, there were no cell phones, and school kids went to school. Teachers were at school. We had policies and procedures for dealing with emergencies,
Yeah.
and there was no way for anybody to use their phone to call for help. You had to like use a phone in your classroom, or you had another way. Like you know, maybe you would pull a fire alarm for any emergency, and everybody would leave. Like that's how it just went. And now the argument is because I've even said like, you know, is it illegal for us to just say in the building, like in the classrooms, cell phones don't work? Like my cell phone doesn't need to work. No one's needs to work, like theoretically. Because you can manage Wi-Fi. Like you can keep cell phones from getting on Wi-Fi. If you don't think you can, you're wrong. It's not that hard.
We have our network. If somebody tries to do, well, we can shut it down, but they also have we have ways to like thwart hotspots even.
So it's like, okay, we don't have to let them on Wi-Fi, and if nobody needs the mobile network, and everyone's like, but if there's an emergency, you need the mobile network. And I kind of disagree. I think if there's an emergency, there should be something inside every classroom and inside the hallway, inside every school that just works, that doesn't require a teacher to get on their phone and make a phone call, or a student, because they don't know who to call. Like, I had an issue the other day, and I said, I need you to call this person. And we're all required to have certain numbers on our cell phones. And they're like, well, I don't have the number. So guess what happened? It just stopped right there. Like, that's it.
I'm
That's it.
done. I'm done.
That
I'm going home.
they have no way to help. And they're just on their messaging programs trying to find somebody. It doesn't work. It's not fast enough. So I think we just need to take a step back and say, does anyone need a cell phone in the school? And I think the answer is no. If it's a problem, like I think school should have an option to like not have cell phone coverage inside the school. There's plenty of government agencies that don't have cell phones allowed. If you go to embassies, they don't let you take your cell phone in.
This is correct. This is very correct.
You, I don't know, like if you go to a government, a big government agency or a big or a consulate or embassy anywhere in the world, all of your stuff is checked. So nobody has cell phones. Nobody. So how are they living? It's like doesn't make any sense. That's what I think. I think that that's actually a better model. We just need to make schools vi more viably safe and make a system so that that's like useful in the classroom, in the hallways, in the offices that works without cell phones. It just seems to make a lot of sense.
Last
I don't
year,
see any.
go ahead.
Have you seen any stats that show the number of lives cell phones save?
No.
In school. In school. Not I'm not saying out in public. In school.
Let me see if I can
See, like cell phones in schools have saved tens of millions of people. Like, where's that?
There's Ohio school shooting drill, cell phone use paid off. That's from someplace in Cleveland. Students use cell phones to contact parents during shooting. That was in Denver. That was 2013. But I don't see anything like a stats.
Yeah, but did the phones stop the shooting? No.
No,
Did
no.
the phones catch the person? No. It's literally just like, hey, the police are here. There's a shooting. I know. I'm watching it on TV. Keep your head down.
And
Like, I'm like, what is the phone doing to prevent the problem?
nothing, nothing. And in
Like
fact, we did training in North Little Rock last year, and they said, keep your kids off, if something happens, keep them off the phone. Keep them off the phone. Because if the phone rings, that could give away your position, right? That's noise.
Yeah,
If somebody's
that's totally
talking,
true.
that means they're not listening to you and they're not listening to directions. And then and this creates a bad thing. Get them to safety. Once they're safe and they're secure and there's, officers around, then say, okay, pull out your phones, text your parents. But the last thing we want to do is make a bad situation worse by not listening, by somebody getting separated just because they're trying to text or talk to somebody. So yeah, I mean, they told us, they said, don't let you collect them if you have to. Don't let them on the phone until you're safe and secure.
So yeah, I just want to see somebody flesh out this greater good argument for me. I'm not sold on it. Like
No.
I even looked at, I thought in China we could do it. I'm like, we should just do this. Like we're not allowed to. But I think it's because the staff don't want to give up their phones.
That's it. That's it.
I think if the staff didn't have their phones, then we just wouldn't, there wouldn't be a fight.
Well, our
Like they
school.
don't care if the students have
Well,
phones.
how about this situation? Our school in Dubai, right? We didn't have any phones in the classroom. We didn't have a we didn't have like a intercom system throughout the school. And so if there was something like I there were times when the principal would call me and say, "Hey, is so and so in your room?" I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh, his parents are here to pick him up. Can you just send him down?" I'm like, "Okay, yeah, sure." And then I would just, you know, say, "Hey, Johnny, you know, your dad's here. You know, we'll see you tomorrow," or something. But there was no other way, or we would get, you know, I don't know. What about in a situation like that where the school doesn't have that infrastructure?
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, let's take a step back. If we were being logical, should any school be able to be built without some type of emergency alert system or communication system between the central office and the classroom? That's question number one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can be old school. It could be old school. Like you pick up a receiver and there's somebody on the other end talking to you. Like they literally have a switchboard and they do like an old school analog signal and it rings and you pick it up. I mean, yeah. It doesn't have to be complicated, but at the same time, Patrick, at that school, was every teacher required to have a cell phone?
No.
In their contract?
No.
So it doesn't really, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't really fix the problem. If every teacher is required to have a cell phone and the school provided the cell phones.
Yeah.
And that was the communication. Then guess what? You could have a cell network that only those phones would work on, and then you could shut the other ones down.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Like there's some logic here.
Yeah. To control it and stem the use. Yeah.
But I think people want their phones. I think the teachers want to use Facebook as much as the students. And I think maybe that's where it comes from. I don't have any time during my day to even like use my personal email more than like 10 minutes. I do all that like at night or in the morning.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I'll send a message to my wife, like, "Do you want to have lunch?" But at the same time, I could just set a meeting with her every day. We could just meet every day at the same time for lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that hard. That's all I'm saying. Like it's not that hard.
Yeah. And you are absolutely right about the staff. I remember in Dubai, we, Raj, you know, one of our IT members of the team, he's like, "I wonder how much bandwidth, how much resources that we allocate, that we have to allocate just for Facebook." And so he blocked Facebook. It didn't even last a whole day before not just teachers, but administrators are like, "Hey, what's going, is everything okay? Cause I can't get onto Facebook." You know, not students. It was the teachers who let me know. And I was like, "Oh, we're just running some tests." And, you know, we found out that it used a sizable amount of our network, just people on Facebook. Yep. So interesting. Interesting. I cannot wait to see what happens September 2018. And
let's go, France. Let's go.
Let's go. Do it.
Now, what if a bunch of amazing boarding schools open in France because parents want their kids to grow up and live somewhere and go to school where they can't use their phones? And
yeah.
It starts a French education revolution.
Or revolution. Vive la France.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, we got two more topics left here, Tony. And let's see, how are we doing on time here? Let me check. Now, we're almost at the 30-minute mark. So we can, I figure we'll do one and we'll save one. So we can either do how effective is your school district from the New York Times, or we can talk about the Chromepocalypse. Your choice.
I think we should talk about the Chromepocalypse because it's current. And next week it won't be current.
This is true. So, Chromepocalypse. At least that's what they were calling it here in Indiana. I don't think it made any real major news. I didn't see it on CNN or any of the blogs. And I didn't see it on any of the major news networks or anything. But what happened was Google pushed out a Wi-Fi policy. And if your school manages Chromebooks, and if schools have them, most schools, they probably do it that way. It pushed this policy out. And what it did is, if they had to type in a password to connect to the Wi-Fi, it said, "Forget that network," and then don't connect to any networks that require a password. So, and this happened like within an hour. So I know of school districts here in Indiana, 20,000 Chromebooks just to disconnect all in the same hour at the same time. Just they all go down. But when you bring it up on the dashboard, The admins were saying, well, we can see them. We can see them and that the policy and that everything is fine. But when you go to the Chromebook, it just won't connect. And so what they had to do, and this was apparently a worldwide issue, according to one Google support specialist. So this just didn't happen in America. This happened all over the place. So I saw this article in EdSurge, and they're like, oh, maybe Chromebooks, you know, teachers should rethink Chromebooks. You know, Chromebooks maybe not shouldn't, you know, maybe this isn't a good solution for schools. I call BS on that. I think Chromebooks are great. Tony, what do you think? Chromepocalypse.
I think it was just, first off, I think it was just one problem. Like, yes. I'll tell you what did make the news. The fact that when you upgraded the High Sierra, it gave root access to everybody in the planet to your machine without a password.
That is correct.
People are running like for real systems and small businesses, especially using just the Apple operating system. They might put OS X server on there, and they might be running it on an iMac or a Mac Mini. Yep. And all those systems were compromised, for real compromised.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, this is the first bad Chromebook thing I've heard.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, I've got a few Chromebooks coming in. We're looking at them for BYOD, like spares. But I think if I ran a Chromebook program, I might consider having a dual boot on there just with another Linux machine, just for this reason. Like, put Ubuntu on there, even if nobody can see it. And just in case there's something big, like, technically, you should be able to install something like Ubuntu server onto something like a Chromebook. And if you need to start Ubuntu server to fix the machine, the advantage is Ubuntu server can run headless. That means there's no GUI or anything. It's just like it lets you boot in and do some work. So if it were possible to boot in and then access the part of the machine that held the Chrome OS where you could go in and manually assign a network and turn the Wi-Fi card back on, I think that would be good for emergencies. So I don't know. But at the same time, I'm saying this, I bet Google's thinking we need to have an emergency partition on the laptop that Chrome administrators can access.
Yeah.
Manual. They need to.
Yeah.
So I think that was the main oversight. And I'm not too worried about it. I mean,
no, neither.
How many times do people update their phones to either Android or iOS and it just bricks the phone?
Oh yeah, it happens, or like Wi-Fi doesn't work on the phone at all.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And their solution is like buy a data plan, and it's like, which is fine because they expect you to have a data plan, but you know, so I don't know. I don't think it's that bad, but I do think there's going to be people as Chromebooks grow, and a lot of people still don't know what Chromebooks are because they look at them and they see Samsung or LG on them, they just think they're Windows machines.
Yeah, or Dell or Lenovo. I mean, HP. I mean, there's a ton of them out there.
Yeah, so I think that as Chromebooks grow, if they start making a huge dent, that some of these companies are probably going to start doing a little marketing against them whenever bad stuff does happen.
Yeah. And, I mean, this article from EdSurge, it definitely feels very, very biased against Chromebooks. But there's not very many. Yeah, there's only one comment on here, so this isn't like, you know, a big thing. And Google did fix it within 24 hours, and people could manually fix it. They just had to create a new network with no password, get the Chromebooks to sign on to that. And then they can push a new policy, their own policy. They could push a new Wi-Fi policy out. That was the fix. And then Google just did that en masse, like overnight. And so the next morning when they turned on their Chromebooks, most of them reconnected. And then they had to go through, and there were some that didn't. They just had to manually do it. But it wasn't a huge deal. But it did cause some problems. But that's the first bad thing I've really heard about Chromebooks. That's it. I can't think of anything else that people have said about Chromebooks.
I don't think people should call it Chromageddon.
I don't like that one. I like Chromepocalypse. It sounds better. No, I know. It should It just sounds that. No, they shouldn't be Chrome again because they didn't. It's not as if they had to throw those out. It's not as if sensitive information was leaked out. And their whole Google Apps for Education was compromised. That didn't happen. Nothing happened.
Right.
They lost Wi-Fi for a half of a day.
Yeah,
You know.
and you know, I always like in the beginning of the year in orientation or whatever, remind every teacher, you need to prepare for non-IT days. You need to prepare for days where everything doesn't work, where the only thing we have is like electricity.
Yeah.
You always need to be prepared for that because there's a lot of things that can like impact your network. Especially like I'm on an island. It's not that hard to turn off the entire island's internet.
Yeah, I imagine a
I
cable
mean,
could be cut or yeah.
we were in the Middle East. We were in a country that was connected to a landmass, and it got its internet from a sea cable, and it was cut like 3 times in 8 years. And when that
Yeah.
happened, there was no internet anywhere for days.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing. Yeah, I remember that.
So, and I think a lot of people take for granted, I'm living in the middle of the United States, nothing can happen. It's like, well, you should really look at where your connectivity comes from because it's probably from a single source.
Yeah, we have 2 lines in our school, so we have a redundant line, we have a backup line. And we use a load balancer to use both the lines simultaneously, which is nice. But earlier this year, somebody got in an accident and hit our pole, which is across the street from our school, and that pole houses our fiber connection. And our main line went down and our backup line kicked in. Well, our backup line is Comcast, and Comcast and a day, the next day was doing service. And so we had interruptions. So our internet was up and down all day for like 2 days. And there was nothing we could do. There was nothing we could do. We just had to live with it, you know?
Yep.
And we're a well-funded private school. It's not like we weren't paying our bills, and here it is. It's gone. It's just gone. So.
Agreed.
Woo. Woo. All right. Man, that's good. Yeah, so we'll save that other one, that New York Times article. We'll save that for the next episode. I think that's
Yeah,
good.
and I guess our like over I start my Christmas holiday on the 23rd
Okay.
and come back like January the 6th, but I think after Christmas, if you wanted to podcast one day, we could do that. If not, it would be after January the 6th. So it's up to you, Patrick.
Woo! I think we can definitely do one over the holiday.
Because we're making the cell phone announcement to the students this week, so I can tell you what happens in the auditorium when that happens.
That's gonna be awesome. That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah,
Oh
I'm
man.
predicting at least 5 kids like actually pass out and or cry. No.
If you can get a picture of one, we can then put that as cover art. That'd be awesome. That'd be sweet.
I'll try to do that. Just cry a little harder. Just cry.
Come on. Give me a snot bubble. All right.
Hey, I kind of can't make fun of them because we want to. We're like, oh, these aren't real problems, but they're just really emotional about this stuff, and it's something like I've become aware of. Like just saying that, like I've become aware that they're actually really sensitive about it. So if you want them to like understand, like this is why we're doing it, and we're going to provide these other activities, and you need to learn to do some other things. Like you've got to approach it, very organized. You can't just be like, get over it, because that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And I don't actually want the kids to be like, so distraught that they just sit and stare. I don't want that.
Yeah. No, we're not trying to harm them. We're trying to make their
But
time a little bit more meaningful.
if there's an unreasonable amount of crying, I will try to document.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right. Anyway, let me wrap things up here. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next podcast. So keep on babbling out there.